Brother Nathaniel Kapner is telling the truth as a former Jew. And fellas, let's bring in Vinny Eastwood. I followed Vinny's work for many years. He's a prodigious broadcaster, webcaster, truth crusader down in New Zealand. And Vinny fought the great fight, not just the good fight, against that bizarre crack-smoking addict, traitorous Jacinda Ardern. And he refused to wear a mask. He refused to buckle down to COVID. And welcome, Vinny. I've never met you, but I followed your work. So meet, I think you know Dave Gahari, but meet crusading black nationalist Ayo Kamathi. In hour one, we were talking about their phenomenal 8-series documentary of season one in blackandwhite.net. But we wanted to pull you in because I understand, because you told the truth about not wearing masks, you're looking at jail time now. So how are you? And tell us what's going on with your fight to stay out of the clink.
Well, you know, if you have one problem in life, like potentially going to jail, that's pretty rough. If you've got two problems in life, like you've been deplatformed and you're going to jail, that's even rougher. If you've got three problems in life, like you've just got a newborn son, that makes it a little bit harder. And there's just so many simultaneous life crises that I'm going through in addition to this, that it's been like probably the toughest period of my life, you know, kind of like the first one for a 13-year-old girl. And when we're talking about standing up for freedom, it's important to understand that you never do so without consequence. Okay, because people who don't like freedom, people who don't like the truth, are generally predisposed to using those terrible methodologies that truth and freedom usually prevent. Violence, theft, deception, so on and so forth. And now what we're dealing with here in New Zealand is a woke culture, and with a fluoridated population that watches trash news, has been dumbed down through successive years of propaganda and miseducation, and a political class that is completely corrupted and infiltrated by internationalist, globalist pieces of trash, it might be hard for an American audience to imagine what it's like in New Zealand. Or maybe you can imagine, because it's precisely what's happening to you. And I'm just the latest round in a group of freedom fighters who have stood up, told the truth peacefully, and have been subjugated for it. We're held in solitary confinement for 28 hours after the arrest. We're supposed to be held for 3. And we were under bail conditions. We were forbidden from accessing the internet and couldn't leave the house. Had bail checks 4 o'clock in the morning, and all sorts of different times of the day and night. And that persisted for about 6 weeks while we were in court trying to get these bail conditions restricted. And we still couldn't talk to each other. Myself and Billy TK had been on tour together and had run an election together. And we couldn't talk to each other for over a year because of these bail conditions. And then the police offered us $1,000 if we pled guilty, right? $1,000 fine. And we wouldn't plead guilty. And then the judge, incidentally a judge who used to be a defense attorney, who once argued successfully for home detention for a man who had over 6,000 highly pornographic child porn images, gave us, for peacefully protesting in the middle of the day during lockdown, 3 months prison for me and 4 months prison for Billy TK. And Billy is a former police officer, a former member of the New Zealand Army, former firefighter, former politician, former international blues guitarist. He's got like 5 kids, and he's a Christian pastor and all of these things. He's working on a documentary right now, riveroflies.co.nz, for anybody who wants to check out some of the workings on there. Huge cast of characters involved, explaining the entire apparatus of this massive globalized control plan from a New Zealand perspective. And he's been subject to, I believe, $97,000 in legal fees. and he's already paid about $60,000 of that and needs to pay a significant amount more. And this is and simultaneously he was charged with fraud during the election, because somebody who was funding the party, who had access to the party bank accounts, came up and gave him some cash and said, "Hey, Billy, this is for you. This is for your family." And then after the party fell apart, the donors list for that party of 70,000 people went missing. And this man wound up funding a new organization that suddenly popped up with all these people everywhere all over the country called Voices for Freedom. And then reported Billy for fraud for not filing that money for a bank account that he didn't have access to, right? And this is what happens in New Zealand when you stand up and you stand for freedom in the political context or in the media context, and we're only two of a number of people who've drawn the ire of the New Zealand government. Bishop Brian Tamaki from Destiny Church led some protests during lockdown. He got locked away for some period of time. Perhaps he's still facing charges now. I'm not 100% sure on that. So many other people as well. What was really scary is Counterspin Media, who featured on the Alex Jones Show, and they were raided by armed police who took all of their equipment, all of their hard drives, absolutely everything, so that they could not continue broadcasting, because they shared a link on Telegram to somebody else's documentary overseas regarding the Christchurch Mosque massacre, which at the time they posted it was not deemed objectionable material by the chief censor, but it was the day afterwards, and nobody warned them about it, and nobody tried to bust them for it until after the media were given $250,000 to create a documentary called Fire and Fury, where it listed, I think, nearly a dozen of New Zealand's alternative media personalities and called them racist, white supremacist, dangerous terrorist type people. And then when the public attention was on, that's when they arrested Counterspin Media, Hannah and Calvin. And they forcibly took Hannah's blood. Five police officers held her down and extracted blood from her, you know? And they're facing 14 years and 28 years, respectively, in prison for sharing a link on Telegram. That's New Zealand today.
That is so deeply disturbing. So what I'd like to do is I'll ask a question and we'll go to Dave, then we'll go to Io. My question, Vinny, is, I must admit, I always wanted to go to Australia or New Zealand, but it wasn't in the cards for me. And at this point, I'm long in the tooth that it's never going to happen realistically. But there's an image of Australians and New Zealands, like just rugged people, individualists, will, you know, not take any shit. And, you know, the most famous example is back in the 80s, the movies Crocodile Dundee and all that. And then, of course, many other examples in the media. How is it that New Zealand, Australia, and some other of the crown countries, Canada and the UK, just so, I envisioned all of the countries, especially New Zealand, Australia, to be just the first that would fight this globalist parasitic wave that they've first tried with the Jubanic Jew Job scamdemic that you fought so brilliantly, as did we here. And now they're trying with this ridiculous carbon net zero BS that's just a farce and every which way. But what happened to New Zealand, man? Was that just an illusion? Were at one point, because I have relatives in Canada, they used to be very independent, and now they're all just knuckled under. So what happened to New Zealand to get to this draconian totalitarian regime that you're fighting now?
Well, it's the totalitarian tiptoe. Back in the 1970s, we had a prime minister who used to work for the World Bank. And then in the 1980s, we had a prime minister who used to work for the World Trade Organization. And then we had a prime minister who used to work for the UN. And then we had a prime minister who used to work for the Federal Reserve. And then we had a prime minister who used to work for Tony Blair, the war criminal. Okay, so successive legislative changes over a long period of time by a systemic group of globalist slime bags seizing power. That's what they did. They dumbed down our education system, they sold off our strategic assets, they borrowed us into oblivion, and they basically ripped apart the fabric of society. They increased the immigration. In some cases, they would sell state assets without even valuing them. When you've got no resources, no opportunities, and you are under the pin of globalism, the kind of mentality that starts to permeate through the population is that of the obedient slave. That's how it came to this.
Wow. Dave Gahari, jump in. Your questions or thoughts for Vinnie Eastwood.
Yeah, I've felt the same way that you did. I thought, you know, they were tough. And they would be the last ones to do that, right? So, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, New Zealanders and Australians and, you know, whoever it might be, Canadians are just like everybody else. And once, you know, you do the whole boiling frog thing and, you know, they have their media there and they fall for all the crap that's going through the media. I guess they're going to be susceptible too. But it is disappointing that when, like you said, Giuseppe, when we saw New Zealand fall the way that it did, and Australia and the Canadian truckers strike, when we saw all of that happen and all that get crushed by, you know, by the powers who should not be, you know, to me, it was really disappointing. And I hope that Vinny, you know, this is coming up pretty soon. This date, I think it's July 31st, which would be, I guess, July 30th by us, because Vinny, you're, you know, light years ahead of us here as far as in time. You're like a whole damn day ahead of us or something like that. But
yeah, breaking news. That's what you get from New Zealand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the fireworks. So I hope that it works out for you. I didn't know you had a newborn son. Congratulations. I'm sorry that they're putting you through this. What they did to you when you were explaining about that judge who, you know, gave a child pornography freak you know, a slap on the wrist. That same thing, that same exact thing happened to that fella in the UK, James Allchurch.
Right.
The judge who sentenced him, the history that he had was almost identical to that one that you're dealing with. There was a, you know, a fellow who was immersed in child pornography, and he basically just let him go. So, you know, this is, I think, endemic throughout this, you know, entity that has control over us, you know, these globalists. And, of course, a lot of them are being, you know, manipulated by the big money behind the scenes. So it's unfortunate. I was kind of hoping that, you know, New Zealand would, you know, fight back. I know you are, my friend, and keep fighting. And I hope that, you know, you get to stay home with your wife and your son.
My partner and my son. But yeah, it's not entirely gone, the New Zealand spirit. It's called the number eight wire mentality. When you're making fences, you would use number eight wire. It's a certain thickness. And back in the day, before we had commercial aircraft and you could get parts in from overseas and things of that nature, it would take you 6 months to get a replacement part for, say, your tractor, right? And so you had to use what you had on hand in order to repair what you had, in order to keep it going until you get the replacement. This is called the number eight wire mentality. So when New Zealanders go overseas, you'll be surprised how different they are from the other world's workers. They can get everything done with very little resources, because there's very little resources here, but we've got the same kind of brain power. So whatever problem there is, we can pretty much solve it. That's the mentality that we tend to have here. Likewise, the spirit of men and strength and honor and decency is not dead yet. And people are willing to fight tooth and nail to ensure that a free country exists for their children. And they're willing to lay down their lives. They're willing to sacrifice their businesses and their homes and everything else that they have in order to ensure that future for their children. And so it's something akin to the end of those big epic movies where right at the last minute something that was set up earlier in the movie turns up and suddenly the day is won. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case here. It might be more like Soviet Russia, where people had to survive for decades, sometimes their entire lives, under oppressive regimes, learning to keep things secret, learning to pass information along by covert means, and having underground little networks to get essential resources so they don't starve or freeze to death in the winter, you know, things like that. That seems to be, I think, more where New Zealand is starting to head. There's a lot of people who don't want to be slaves, but they don't really have a choice. And so they're going to make of it what they can and try to ride it out. But what's problematic is with Agenda 2030 and their 500 new vaccines that they want to bring into existence by 2030, 500 new vaccines, these are mRNA vaccines that they want to bring in, by the way. We're talking about a mass genocide, and then they can just use drones to move people off the land and things of that nature into their little apartment complexes alongside the railroad tracks that have been built everywhere in Auckland around me while I'm living here. You know, there's no escaping this. There's no denying destiny. If you are living in this time and you have the ability to think, you are going to get killed by the system unless you stop it from reaching fruition. And so many people don't realize what it's like to be in a life or death situation. I've been in a number of them. And if you're cool and you're calm, you survive it. And that's what people need to recognize, is not to let the fear take you and control you. Just understand the threat that you're dealing with and respond.
Wow, that's really, really inspirational. Io, any questions or thoughts for Vinny Eastwood?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this. I got to pretty much get his sentiment on it. First of all, I certainly don't like what I'm hearing happening to you is happening to people all around the world. But my question would be to you, because what I would say, I don't sugarcoat things. It would be very direct and very serious. Is that something you would want to hear?
Yes.
Okay. When I'm listening to what you're saying, and I was watching what was happening in Australia when they started mass injecting people in Australia with these genocide shots, and I see the same thing happening all around the world. And I started to look and say, well, let me see what kind of power that the Jews have in Australia. I was absolutely shocked out of my mind. I don't think it was the person that ran Australia, but the major positions that I saw and the people who were pushing this thing, it was overt. I don't remember. I did the research when it happened. Because I saw how what was happening in Australia was as aggressive, probably maybe the most aggressive place in the world. I saw a young man walking through the airport without a mask get body slammed. I think he died, but he got, and I'm saying, I'm familiar with seeing black people. I've been through those kinds of things as a black person in America. I've never seen white people go through this. And what hit me was when we're saying that we're in the time of the Bolsheviks, it's not a joke. The Jews are going to exterminate everyone, and you are their greatest threat now. And the issue that I'm seeing is that even here as we're having this dialogue, And I'm not advising you to say anything different. You know your circumstances better than I do. I don't want any of this to be put on you because you're dealing with real serious circumstances. I'm saying it from my vantage point. The dialogue has got to escape globalists, the elite, the 1%. We got to start saying Jews. It's not woke culture. It's Jewy culture. You got Jewed up. This is this Jewish response. The word's got to become Jew. This Jewish tyranny, this Jewish extermination. In other words, the enemy who cannot be identified has won. It's universal. We're all dealing with the same Jew, and nobody wants to say it. Once people, and I'm not telling you to do it, but once we go from a solo to a choir, and it's too many voices to be muffled, and no one's afraid, what we'll realize is that all of us are facing the same genocide from the same small group. They can't win. They can't win, but they're winning because no one will publicly, bravely, articulately, with wisdom and courage, identify them with direct language. You are exterminating people. This is what you're doing. You're taking away our freedoms. We're not going to allow Jews to do this. That will change things.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a possibility for that. And in New Zealand, we have I think it's probably the same in America. It's probably the same in the whole world, that you've got people who are afraid to call a spade a spade. Now, our former Prime Minister, John Key, who worked for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York before he became Prime Minister, is absolutely 100% Jewish. And we had, even on the news, with his Yarmulke on and going to Jewish festivals and things of that nature. That one I know for sure. The rest of them I'm not 100% on. What I do know is that they all belong to the same groups and clubs, like, you know how you've got the Council on Foreign Relations in America, how you got all the head Jews and all the apparatus of the United States leading media moguls and whatnot. And in New Zealand, there's groups and clubs like that, and even one for parliamentarians. This is, Parliamentarians for Global Action. And this is a group that you have to be an elected member of parliament in a democratically elected country to be a member of, and you have to pay by credit card. And what they have as their stated goal is to end national sovereignty. Right? And that's out there,
a stated goal,
in your face. And I think that these people are absolutely evil, whether or not their belief is 100% Jewish. I don't know for sure, haven't done the exact research on that, but I do know that they're evil. Whatever other name we have for them is kind of irrelevant once you realize what you're dealing with is pure psychopathy. People who will do things that you would never do. People who would do things you wouldn't even think of doing, and they would do it without any remorse whatsoever, without a skerrick of guilt, and they'd do it again. They might even enjoy it. This is the kind of terror that should be instilled in the general population, who for the vast majority of them haven't encountered one of these creatures before. They don't know what they're dealing with.
Have you seen In Black and White episode 7 on COVID?
No.
If Mr. Giuseppe, if you could send him a link to episode 7, he would greatly appreciate it, and it would be helpful for him to share with his community to understand where this tyranny is coming from and where it's going. Because, see, these are fighters. And what happens is when a man like this is fighting and people don't stand up and support him, then we start losing the people that can help us win this fight. He's a fighter. He's brave. He's standing up. He's doing what most people don't know how to do and don't have the courage to do. But they will follow him if they could understand how important what he was doing is. Let's give him some resources to help him.
Cheers, Brian.
Absolutely. I'm doing the email now. So I'll skip my, well, actually, I'll jump in my question and then finish the email. Vinny, doing as you have, because you've been a prolific webcaster, broadcaster for years, followed your work, enjoyed it a lot. You're bright, and you're also charismatic and you're entertaining. That's a rare combination in the indie media, and I salute you for that. But in my own research, looking at that bizarre subhuman Jacinda Ardern, I've seen multiple clips of her getting high as a kite, smoking crack cocaine or crystal meth. And so, is that a well-known fact in New Zealand that she's a crazed addict and that's how she got to climb the ladder with the World Economic Forum young leaders?
Well, as a former cannabis activist, I actually saw the same video and saw that it was actually a cannabis bong that she was smoking.
Oh, really? So. I thought that was okay.
Or at least that's my expert opinion, man. and however, let's not forget that the vast majority of people in positions of power are alcoholics. What's the number one substance that's used in the ritual demon possession? You know, why do you think they call it spirits?
Right.
You know, that's why cannabis is illegal, because it would allow people to obtain altered consciousness without inviting demons into them. You know, just a side note. And what's interesting about this, having talked to former soldiers and former police, and this is the reason why they drink, is so they can sleep. If you've got really, really bad stuff on your back and you've done really terrible things and you still have a conscience despite all that, sleep is very difficult for you, because when you fall asleep, the ghosts come. All right, all the things that you've done start to revisit you in your dreams. And so the way that they get around this is they drink to the point where they black out. It's only when they black out that they don't have to deal with those dreams and they're actually able to sleep. This is the everyday trauma of people in the police and the military who've seen and done terrible things. And what we're dealing with here in New Zealand is a whole bunch of police who, as soon as they get a court case saying you guys don't have to take the jab, they're immediately on a bus down to Wellington to kick off all the people from Parliament lawns using sound weapons, EMF weapons, pepper spray, and riot gear. And what were those protesters protesting? The mandates and people having to get the jabs. You see? You're dealing with just this raw cult type mentality. And if Jews are at the center of it, I remember having Adam Green from No More News on the show one time. And I said, look, there has to be something to it, because there definitely isn't nothing to it.
Yep, exactly right. Dave Gahari, your question for Vinny Eastwood.
Yeah, what I'd like to know, Vinny, is if you could just let us know what exactly that you did to put you in legal jeopardy. And like, if you can explain the, not just the physical things that you did, but the time span that you did it in.
Okay. Well, after the election, me and Billy were kind of like number one and number two freedom fighters in the country, and we were currently on tour around about a time that we were predicting another lockdown was going to happen, because we had leaked information from about 9 different sources, like supermarkets, teachers, doctors, and so on and so forth, who'd been given information in preparation. And when they did call the lockdown, it was with a 6-hour warning window. So we got the warning at 6 p.m. That night, and the lockdown was going into effect midnight that night. And we were in the middle of a tour. We were about to go to a hall to give a speech. And so we had to cancel that. And so we decided to organize a protest. And we put some social media together. We put a few banners up and what have you to get people to come down. Had about 100 people turn out in level 4 lockdown the day of, outside Television New Zealand Studios, which is the main government broadcaster in New Zealand here, in the central city of Auckland, our largest city. and we spoke on the microphone and megaphones for approximately 45 minutes before Billy was arrested by the police for organizing a gathering and attending a gathering under the COVID-19 health bill, which was passed at 4 o'clock in the morning and gave police untold powers. And about 3 minutes later, I was arrested for the same charges. And that's all there is.
Can I jump in here? Because I want to ask a question. Mr. Eastwood, do you have a solid understanding of why what you were doing was so threatening and why it's being treated this way? Do you actually have a solid understanding of what's driving them to be so angry about you having a protest like that in the discussion?
And you fly a flag in the face of your enemy so publicly, they have to be seen to come down very, very hard on you. The reason why that is because if you're seen to be lenient, then it will encourage others to stand up and do likewise. And yeah.
Let me ask it a different way. All you were doing is saying you had some issues with lockdown, and it was related to these injections, and them saying that there were things. Do you understand why they have a problem with someone saying no to anything related to these injections?
I think there's a lot of reasons if you want to unpack it. Number one, because if you want any real tyranny to prevail in this country or any other, there has to be a medical tyranny. You have to have ownership over people's bodies. If you've got ownership over their body, you've got ownership over their mind, because the mind has to fall first. And ultimately, if you're out there as a beacon trying to get people to wake up to this, there is really no telling what kind of a threat you could become. It could be a great big fire in the minds of men that comes out. And of course, if you are opposed to this is all part of a global plan. And that global plan is about enslaving mankind and exterminating the majority of it, all right, and enslaving that is rest. So if you're going to enslave people, if you're going to exterminate people, why wouldn't you arrest a couple of people who are peacefully protesting and brutally destroy their lives and their reputations by banning them from the internet when they couldn't speak out for themselves and then demonize them all over the media?
So oh, let me, you knocked it out of the park. This is the one piece. And what I'm just listening. All right. You have the general understanding of what you're facing. You have the courage to fight it. You're standing in the center. What you need now, and I've already said it, but I'm going to say it again, but it's important. I want you to start with the COVID-19 one, because that's right in the center of what you're dealing with and what you've gone through. But it's an 8-part series. It's short, though, 30 minutes apiece. It's free. I want you to watch them. And then when you watch them, you got to share them with everybody you know that needs to know something. Because what will happen is, once you see it, it will crystallize to make what you already understand perfectly crystallized. And you'll totally understand what you're dealing with. But then you won't be in a solo mission now. It won't be a small group of you. If you can share that information around Australia, people will understand who's doing it and why we did it that way. You'll now start to see that your resistance will grow and be more effective. It'll be a tremendous help to you.
Well, one can only hope. It's the problem with New Zealanders is the accent. It's low and it's slow and it doesn't move the bottom jaw. You know, you don't live in rural New Zealand. You live in rural New Zealand. Right. Whereas opposed to the Australian accent, which is just a flared nasal passengers, they don't go camping in the desert. They go camping in the desert. All right. So the mentalities are very, very different between Australians and New Zealanders. Number one, you can tell by the accent that the Australians are a lot brighter. and a lot happier and a lot more enthusiastic about life. And New Zealanders, on the other hand, are ridiculously difficult to motivate and difficult to get angry, I think, as well. There's just this whole thing, man. And it's the same problem that you have in the United States, trying to get somebody off of the football and onto the Jews, right?
Well, I'd like to ask a question, Vinny. I was perusing some of the webcasters, broadcasters I respect, and I really like Henrik and Lana over at Red Ice TV, and they asked a not-so-rhetorical question on their show last week, which was, what's it going to take for the white people to riot? And especially the case in New Zealand, where, I mean, it's stunning to me, as we have a broadcasting brother in Australia. His name is Sean Surplus, who's been doing, before it all, the totalitarian lockdown, he would do his own weekly show or a couple times a week called Two's Company, Three's a Crowd. And he's definitely a nationalist and anti-Jew. And he just posted on Skype in a shared chat we're in that he's looking at 2 years prison if he doesn't immediately take down all his shows that he's done from the last 10 years. And so he's got a young teenage daughter, so he did, but they can't stop him from broadcasting it live where he lives. So he's got a speaker going all day long playing his shows. And so that's his form of rebellion. And what's it going to take for the white New Zealanders, or all New Zealanders, to riot? I mean, and to take down one of these governments? I mean, I would have thought long ago the Canadians would have got rid of the traitorous, illegitimate son of Fidel Castro, Fidelito Trudeau. But yet they boo him and they swear at him. I watched a clip this week of that. But he just brushes it off, and because he thinks he's a made man, right? These individuals are all criminals in a mafia-like cult, and they think they're untouchable, but I don't think they are. So what's it going to take to light a fire, and when will the New Zealanders, if or when the New Zealanders will riot and take down that government? Because if one of the crown countries does it, they'll all do it, I believe.
I mean, people thought that that point would come when they came for the children and they started locking down schools and when they started jabbing children as young as 6 months and things of that nature. That didn't do it. People thought it might be when they came for the guns with 14 days notice right after the Christchurch mosque massacre. That didn't do it. People thought it might have been when they deplatformed everybody who was speaking any kind of truth in the middle of an election. That didn't do it. All right. So, you know, it's a great question. What is it going to take for white people to riot? I mean, the closest thing we know of is what it takes for white people to riot in New Zealand in recent memory is it takes a Canadian trucker thing to transplant in the New Zealand consciousness and then have a New Zealand convoy and then just set up camp in Parliament for like a month or so with huge amounts of peace, huge amounts of love, huge amounts of together spirit of freedom, and then to have a whole bunch of police and riot shields try and take them out. That made them riot. But I'm not sure you can just repeat that.
Go ahead, Ayo.
Yeah, if I can, as I'm listening. This is a difficult fight. Here's the fight. Jews and their proxies, meaning white folks who are doing the Jews' bidding, are the ones that are harming you. But they're all white. So here's the difficulty. You all can't identify the enemy. See, when you say attack the government, here's the problem. You are the government. So you'll be attacking yourself. So it's not like one thing in America, whether it's black or white. If something happens to somebody white and they see that it's somebody black, you can get an attack. Or if black people feel like it's somebody white, you can get an attack. Because at least you can, whether you're right or wrong, you can identify the enemy. What you all have is a very complex structural problem. The Jews who are pushing everything to exterminate you look just like you. And most people, even if you said they were a Jew, wouldn't even know what that means. So the difficulty is people cannot figure out what to fight, because from the way they see it, they'll be fighting themselves. Like government, the power, that has to go. So the trick becomes, and again, I'm not there. You are. You know the terrain better. The trick becomes, and again, that's why we did this, but it's not just this. Whatever will work will work. You have to be able to get them to see, oh, this little group now is contextualized. This is who's doing it. That changes things. You're now not going against your government. You're telling your son, who is a police officer, hey, you will not participate in the extermination of white people on behalf of these Jews. See, that's a different articulation, because now he's government, but there's nothing in your write-up of your constitution that says anybody has the right to exterminate the people. So he doesn't have the right to participate in protecting the genocide of the white masses in that country himself or herself, anybody in those positions. But when you say government and they're in those positions, that includes the whites that are just doing what they're told to do. You have to be able to pull them out, which can only occur when they can see a common enemy and be able to identify it. That has to be done in order for you to make any successful, effective movement in the right direction. Otherwise, you'll just be fighting each other.
Yeah, and that is exactly what's happening in New Zealand at the moment. There is like 8 different freedom parties that have popped up, all of them with like not a percent of the vote between them. You know, and so if they all went, it's the Jews, bro, okay, and they're all on the same page, then they could all come together. That's what you're saying, yeah?
That when you find that centerpiece, and then see, again, I'm not doing this, cause there's no money coming out of this. I'm just telling you, this is why we created it. We created something for a guy like you who's got the heart, the courage, and the necessity. You got to take care of your family. To say, here, if you take this, everyday person, maybe it'll be a little more difficult in New Zealand, but you'll find people that will understand it like yourself. Everyday people can look and say, oh, this is what the problem is. And they can look at their own situation and say, that's why this was happening. This is the objective. I now hear them saying it. And now people will start to say, yeah, we have this Jew running this and this Jew running this. And this is the Jew that did this. And this person is just working and doing whatever the Jew tells them to do. So they're not a Jew, but they're working on behalf of the Jews. Now you have people who can isolate an understanding of how to attack the problem. Now you can win.
Exactly. And that's the problem with the formation of the Illuminati. They never actually even had a name. G. Edward Griffin called them the group. All right, because it's not just Jews, it's not just Satanists, it's not just white people, it's not just black right. people, it's all of them working together for the same freaking Jewry goal, isn't it? With that in mind, the real central complex that's been dismantled at the heart of mankind's ability to resist these kind of ideals is anarchism, all right? Anarchy, without a ruler. And if people aren't able to see the whole basic fundaments of fundamental, cosmic and karmic law, don't do any harm, but don't take any shit, okay? Don't be right. violent and defend yourself if somebody is being violent towards you. A lot of these problems wouldn't exist. Government wouldn't exist. The whole tools of Jewry and how they actually weave everything out is basically annexed if you have a population that's unwilling to accept any of those fundaments. And so, you know, having that karmic, cosmic, natural law sort of perspective, I think, is a great bulwark against it. But in the meantime, we're talking about a true broad brush, full spectrum dominance, military operation that is being perpetrated on mankind by this one organized group of individuals. Now, how do you identify those group of individuals? Now we've got that. Now the question is next, what do you actually do about them? Now, first step, other than, you know, last step would be if you've got no other choice, military actions and things of that nature. This is why people eventually go to war, not because they have to, or rather not because they want to, but because they have to, they got no other choice. It's last resort type thing. So before that happens, you've got to think about what dependency do you currently have on this system of Jewry? All right. Are you buying their food? Are you paying their telecommunication companies? Are you watching their films? Are you voting for their political candidates and things of that nature? And how can you organize with people in your own community in order to provide these things that you need for yourselves without contributing anything to that rolling system? That's number one. And once you've got that sorted, then you've got to think about number two, how do you replace that system out there with what you've got to take away its power at the hilt? And then finally, three, you don't have dependency issues anymore, and your enemy is weakened and backed into a corner, and that's when you stamp them out. Not when they're strong, not when they're organized, not when they've got gall and stuff like that. You want them on the back foot.
Wow, great repartee between two superior intellects, Io and Vinny. And Dave Gahari are coming to the final 8-9 minutes, and you've got inblackandwhite.net's got a big event coming up on September 11th. So why don't you tell us about it, Dave?
Well, that is, you know, something that Io came up with again. Shit, Io has come up with everything. I literally have come up with nothing. All right, I'm just going to admit it right here. Nothing.
Hey, he got you onto the ADL hate list, man. It's
that's it. What am I doing? Okay, look, it's not. I know I've done a few things, and one of them is I actually, Vinny, I suggested to Giuseppe that he have you on his show. So I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, me too.
And Vinny, check your Skype. Okay. I know a lot of things are going on right now, but check your Skype. All right. Io, you know, he, you know, coming from the background that he does as a hardcore black nationalist, which to a lot of whites, to a lot of white nationalists, they have a lot of respect for the guy because he's fighting for his own people, which is what he should do. And who is, you know, the poster child of, you know, white nationalism, and that's David Duke. So he thought, hey, you know, maybe that would be a good idea, you know, to get them together. So I facilitated that. And that's why, you know, I'm a threat to the ADL. Because I'm pretty much nice to everybody, and I want to introduce people to each other and let them meet and do what they want. I don't like to get in the middle of things. I just like to make the introduction and let them, you know, go off and do what they want. So I hooked these guys up, and although they haven't yet officially met, whether, you know, in person or, you know, over the phone or the internet. And so on September 11th, there's going to be, you know, an amazing event here where Io and Dave will talk together about, obviously, the issue that is bringing us together, all of us together. And that is, of course, the eternal enemy, the common enemy. And that's going to happen on live stream on inblackandwhite.net. And it's going to be broadcast all over the world. And obviously you can see the time there, or I shouldn't say that because there's folks listening on audio. Anyway, it's September 11th, a Monday, from 5 to 7 Central Time. So Vinny, what time is that in your neck of the woods?
16 hours ahead.
Yeah, well, 5 p.m. Central Time, I believe, is about 11 a.m. New Zealand Standard Time.
On the 12th, yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So 11 a.m., right? And it should be a great event. And again, all of this stuff is just, you know, People who wouldn't ordinarily get together, they're getting together. And because I know both Io and Dave, I know about their, their personalities on interviews and stuff. And I've watched interviews that Io has done with people who have pressed him, and he's always remained cool under pressure. I don't think I could remain that cool. I'd have to snap back, but he's really cool. He's not aggressive. Dave can, fly off the handle a little bit if he's tweaked a certain way. So hopefully that's not going to happen, or maybe it'll make for a good program. But looking forward to, and I want to just ask, before I turn off my microphone, Vinny, and maybe I shouldn't ask. Maybe Giuseppe was going to ask. I'll ask you, G. Were you going to ask Vinny how folks could, help him out?
That was exactly my next question.
Right. So I'm turning off my microphone.
Vinny, you're a hero. You're fighting the good fight. All the aphorisms. How can people worldwide support you, good sir?
With all the aphorisms, never had that one before. I mean, all of them.
Every single one. Here we go. Ready?
Okay. So, first of all, you can go to VinnyEastwood.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, ladies and gentlemen, make a donation into the PayPal, Kiwi Bank, or Patreon, supporting my band, Vinny and the Vendettas, and making music for a number of years now. It's good stuff, if I do say so myself. Additionally, you can help Billy out by going to riveroflies.co.nz or emailing him for donation details at billy@ibc.net.nz. That's billy@ibc.net.nz. We have a change.org petition. So if you go to change.org and you look for justice for Billy TK and Vinny Eastwood, there is a petition there to hopefully either lessen our sentence or let us go scot-free, which would be impossible at this point, really. Just sign that and share it around, please, ladies and gentlemen. That would be wonderful. And on the 31st of July, that's this coming Monday in New Zealand, that would be Sunday in the United States, around about 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, we'll be outside the New Zealand Courthouse in Waterloo Quadrant in the Central City to have a wee bit of a gathering outside the court before we actually go in. And there's a possibility on the day that we will go to jail immediately. If the judge has already made up his mind, what my lawyer advises is probably a bit more likely is that they will keep us in limbo for a little while longer while the judge deliberates the hundreds of pages of documents and four lawyers' different interpretations that the judge has to sit and listen to, which is possibly more likely. But then again, we do live in a dictatorship here in New Zealand, so all the cards are on the table at this point. So any support that people can be is greatly appreciated, in particular hooking me up with any other people who can interview me and help to get the word out about what's happening here in New Zealand and to us and possibly to the other alternative media that are being persecuted at this time as well. It's greatly appreciated, the international effort, because if there's a Jew world order, then obviously we're the new world order, aren't we?
There you go. That's a good line, Vinny. And I want to thank Dave Gahari, Io Kamathi, Vinny Eastwood. We're coming up to the end of the show. Vinny, I do three shows a week. So anytime you want to come back on to continue to inform the world about what's going on with you, you got an open invitation. And it was a great discussion with you, Dave, and Io. So maybe we can have this again next month or the month after at your guys' schedules. But I want to thank you all. And I just can't stress enough to all the listeners, all the viewers, and these three gentlemen that, you know, there is no room for cowardice anymore. These are evil, Balians, Luciferians, Satanists, whatever you want to call it. But the biggest mistake that people make is thinking that they think like us, they act like us. They don't. They are trying to kill us all, and it's time to wake up. No more time for cowards. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and tune in Friday noon. I'm going to have Alfred Schaefer and Tony, Professor Tony Hall, talking about their legal travails. But until then, thanks so much to IO Dave and Vinny Eastwood. God bless you all, and we'll see you Friday. Good night, everybody.
Good luck, Vinny.
See you, guys.
Good luck, Vinny.
Thanks, guys.